You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, we're actually going to do a lot of things, not just trolling, but we're going to go inside and we're going to go outside. It, like I was telling you a little while ago, when you go to wpcouncil.org, there's a plethora of stuff available. I mean, just so much stuff. And you're just taking in for granted that, well, somebody just got some nice pictures and wrote a little story and put it on the website. No, no, no. There's lots of stuff that goes behind that. Some of which you've learned, and you're going to learn about that today, both from two different angles. First of all, you're going to learn about some island fisheries, inshore and offshore fisheries for some islands and a lot of things to do with that. And then later, after that, this is part one of two. In next week, we'll recap what we're doing today, and we'll also go into pelagics. But it dawns on me that some of you don't know the difference. We've got a couple of special guests. First, introduce you to Malloy Saboteur. He's been with us many, many times before. He is a fishery monitor with the council, and there's more to it than meets the eye, Malloy. When you take a look at a report like we have at a council meeting, like we just finished a big council meeting, or you go online and go look at something, people think, well, somebody just sat down and wrote this. There's a lot more that goes behind it, right? All what you do.
Right. There's a lot of good data coming in from the different areas that we manage. That would include American Samoa, Guam, CNMI, Hawaii.
CNMI also in this discussion, right, today.
Right, when we talk right. About everything. Islands. So yeah. we're talking about island fisheries, and we monitor those fisheries through our annual, what we call an annual stock assessment and fishery evaluation report. So this is the one-stop shop for all information about fisheries, and not just catch, CPOE, and effort. This would also include information about protected species interaction, habitat, essential fish habitats, and the environment. We also summarize what's happening in the environment on an annual basis.
You know, what I find interesting, when you read one of the articles, and you just rolled so many of them off your tongue, we just talked about 10 or 12 things. Each one of these takes a number of hands and a number of different angles and a lot of science and a lot of reporting and a lot of reworking and drafting and passing around. Is this correct? Before a report comes out, it's right. Been around the block a few times.
There is a lot of hands involved in the development of this report. And so what happens is that we, as our archipelagic plan team members, generate several sections of the report. Mm-hmm. But they're the ones who's summarizing or compiling or even interpreting the data. But the data is actually collected by the local and the state fishery management agency.
And that's what we're going to talk about. I want to liken what we're doing here to salmon swimming upstream. We got all of these different sources. Everybody's swimming upstream to get to the top, lay their eggs, give out their stuff. And once that's done, now it's got to be converted into language that becomes a tool.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you look at those numbers, interpret those numbers on what's going on. And we also vet this report to our advisory groups, our fishermen, community members, other agencies to provide their inputs. And then there's what we call a taskmaster who is with us today that compiles everything, reads everything, proofreads, and makes the edits before it goes to the council.
Yeah, it makes me dizzy. Just thinking of all of the stuff he has to do. So we welcome also to the program for the first time. He's actually a contractor working for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, Thomas Remington. So how in the world? First of all, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate Hi, Mike. Glad to be here.
Where do you come from? Where's home?
I'm originally from California, the Bay Area, but that was years ago.
Yeah. And what brought you to Hawaii?
Originally, I came out to do my master's at Hawaii Pacific University, and that's where my relationship with the council started.
And in what field? What did you do your master's in?
It was just generally marine science when I started. I wasn't sure, but coming out here and kind of seeing what the council did, I definitely was able to zero in on fishery science in particular.
How cool has it been when you see some of these people come over with scholarships or something or come from within the community, whether it's summer intern program or whatever, and actually bring in youthful people like yourself into the system, which we really need.
No, it's great to see the new young blood, per se, coming up in the field, because there's so many gurus, right? There's so many people that have been in the field for so many decades, and they know it like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. But then there's this new generation of people coming up, and it's great to learn the processes and kind of have our own input in that way.
We're not going to fold in too much. Well, we are going to fold in some environmental stuff here, Malloy, but when you talk about that, it's like maybe the information that is being provided or looked for is way more important to some parts of the council's realm than others. I mean, here in Hawaii, if we're short stuff, we can just bring it in. But if you're in Don CNMI or some other place, you can't be short. You got to know what's going on. So is there a difference in the reporting between some of the remote places that really depend on the fishery more than we do here, say on a big guy in Hawaii?
Definitely, there's some there's more information for Hawaii because this is the hub of where most of the science are being done. But the importance of our other jurisdiction or other areas is also needs to be highlighted. Yeah. And they're on their own in some respects in terms of the environmental information, for example. That's why we're using some of the satellite derived products to kind of determine what's the environment like over there, and also use local knowledge in those areas through our advisors to inform what's going on in the fishery. So they have have a stake in this game because we publish the information through this report, and everyone's going to know what's going on.
Yeah, and we'll tell you the end result and how you can see some of these. But if we go back to Tom and talk a little bit about more or less that, I'm kind of envisioning it like there's a big funnel. At the top end, everybody's storing this stuff. It all comes down and it ends up on your desk.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that the interesting thing is, I know that there's a high expectation of performance. That, they're usually, from what I can understand, all my years association with the council, a lot of this stuff, it's not last minute, but right to the last minute, you're compiling it because there's deadlines and needs.
Absolutely.
How does technology help you stay abreast of that? How's your job maybe changed with the introduction of better technology?
Well, I think it's definitely helped collaboration among the different agencies and groups, just because receiving data is one thing, but there's also that special insight that you get from the local knowledge from people in the territories. Yeah. And, they're able to expand on changes in numbers that you might be able to see but not be able to interpret away.
What about this? I mean, I'm guessing that sometimes it's on the written page. A lot of the stuff that you deal with came from way over there on a piece. But isn't it sort of interesting if you have an idea who wrote that stuff that went on that page and where they gathered that stuff from?
Oh, absolutely. And, it's just the nature of that they're able to gather this information from so far away and relay it. And then we're able to kind of compile it and send it out for the public to digest as they want. Like, they think that's great. And it just shows how far we've come in kind of being able to turn around an annual report like this in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, as opposed to a couple of years. That slays me. I mean, honestly, because I do know that not only the council meets a lot. I mean, there's at least three meetings, big ones a year, right?
Right, three meetings a year, both from our Science and Statistical Committee and the Council. They make decisions every time. And we use information from this report to inform, the fishery management decisions, as well as to inform, the stock assessments, for example.
Yeah, and the stock assessments, gang, are those that are used to determine what is a allowable catch. In other words, what can you keep catching in that species in that place and keep proliferation? I mean, isn't that the key to everything that we all do?
Right. You know? I guess I would say the very bottom line of these annual reports is that they can inform these annual catch limits. Mm-hmm. So, different species that might be fished more than others, we can say, hey, there's a spike in this past year. Yeah. We got to keep an eye on this species or that species.
I'm wondering, and we're going to talk about the environmental impact and a lot of that as the discussion goes on. But we're sitting in a really interesting place right now. We've got now, at the time of this recording, over 2 months of solid eruption of lava entering the sea and fish getting boiled like crazy, And I'm guessing that this is a really, Malloy, I don't know how much discussion goes on at the council about this, but this is a great time to realize how important information and everything is, because just if you look at the tide pools at Kapo, they're gone. What used to be a resource is gone now. So what are we going to do?
So it's interesting this natural event unfolds and we keep tabs on what's going on. The question now is the existing resource there are able to recover, and also so there's multiple ways of looking at it. One is, once everything calms down and it's safe to go back in the water, then to go do a survey, look what happened.
Are you excited to be able to do that soon?
Hopefully. Oh, I wish I could go in the water, but now I'm just like a number cruncher.
But I think that what lies in there, and the reason I said that with regards to the tide pools, Because I remember as a kid going to Kapoho. That was where you learned. And because it was so magnificent there, and I guess that you guys can appreciate this, but when you were in the water there, it goes from 0 to 200 feet deep in no time. And now that's all been covered. And it, the new lava, from what I understand, report I was looking at, is 200 feet deep, all the way down to the bottom. Oh. So now what's happened is the shore has been pushed out. How long is it going to take? And are there any answers about how soon will that be vegetated and become a reef, if ever?
Yeah, that would be an interesting science question. Yeah. And there's like a discipline in science that looks into that. Yeah. Like what do you call that thing? Like recruitment events that happen, and you monitor that over time. So there's going to be a lot of I would think empirical experiments that can be done in that area.
What happens to what you talked about before? The catch reports and the stock assessment, because in that 2 miles, there's going to be no stock assessment for a long time anymore.
Well, the stock assessment looks at the whole distribution of the full distribution of the cache and not just one small area. Whether that area contributes significantly to to the cache and the cache per unit effort of a stock. Mm-hmm. So I would think a two mile stretch. And if you compare it to the whole main Hawaiian island, the main eight, which is the scale to which we manage, that will be a small component. And whether there's an area specific data that you can glean from, like a reporting grid exactly at that spot.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Because you might have to put a little asterisk in the report, right? Saying, by the way, this was pre the eruption. But isn't that also a time when you sort of realize that? Boy, all of the studies and the reports are so necessary because things do change. This is like in a blink of an eye, this whole thing has changed immediately, drastically. Okay, so the end users are the decision makers, right? In other words, the reports that you compile, the information goes uphill, and new rules, regulations, and things come from, in other words, the purpose, Maloy, of the reports.
Well, the purpose of the report is to monitor the fisheries, really, and to provide an avenue to which we can disseminate those information. And we compile all this information into a one-stop shop, which what we call the annual safe report. And it's a requirement of our fishery ecosystem plans, and it's also a requirement of the National Standard 2, where, NIFS needs to develop this stock assessment and fishery evaluation.
Yeah, and that's why I was interested, because when it says safe report, I thought it had to do with OSHA regulations, But in some respects, it kind of does. I mean, just by definition, isn't the reader to expect, what am I reading here? What is this? What is it trying to convey to me?
Well, it's looking at what sort of management measures are already in place, kind of how those are in place throughout the islands, and then how are they doing? How are the stocks responding to the management that's already in place? Mm-hmm. And do we need to have more management in some areas? Yeah. Do we need to have less management in some areas? So we're compiling the data that kind of tells that story, and then we can kind of take it a step further and interpret whether management measures that are in place right now are good or bad.
Okay, let's talk about some of these shared responsibilities that have been changing lately. There's more and more say, we want to manage our own resource. We want to be a bigger stakeholder in that. And I would imagine that those reports are probably way more valuable than something that's just anecdotally, well, they used to catch 50 lobsters a year in Kapoho, now there's none. That might not be true. So when we're talking about the when I met Thomas off the air before we started recording this, folks, I said it was like, GIGO, I remember that when I first started learning about computers. GIGO is garbage in, garbage out. And what I'm guessing is that the in coming to you now is a lot better than it used to be. I'm hoping it is.
I'm hoping it is too. Haven't been around that long, but I know that there have been efforts to improve the data collection and sort of the process pipelining the data from the territories to the council, because it's been such a problem in terms of compiling data for such small fisheries in these islands and then, kind of trying to tell the whole story there.
Well, what I like about that, and Maloy, remember we were talking to Dean Sensui not too long ago about this, is now you can go to one of these remote places, drop a couple of GoPros in the water and get a lot of information.
Right, and this emerging technology is being used more and more when in collecting fishery independent information, and we actually use some of this GoPro technology and this is going to be a couple of shows down, we're going to talk about Kona crabs. We use GoPro cameras to evaluate whether the catchability of those crabs on those crab nets, and also what are the types of predators that preys on those crabs.
because you can't see it. Right?
You can't see it.
And when people, you jump in the water, it all disappears. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're a shark. They don't want to have anything.
So the fishery is assuming that the sharks are preying on the crabs,
right?
Because when you bring when you haul your traps, there's only half a crab left.
Yeah.
But apparently the culprit is not. So sharks are being wrongfully accused in this case.
Exactly.
It's actually other sure. surprising, and we will reveal that later on.
Yeah. Well, we look at one thing. And when we looked, I think, and this must be really interesting, Thomas and Malloy, to you guys, is that the Papahanaumokuakea area, now that it's forbidden, the apex predator there is maybe not the shark, it might be the ulua. There's some really big schools of monster ulua that any one of us would love to catch, and they are sort of determining the future of a lot of the species around the reefs, right?
Oh, absolutely. I know there's been studies that show in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands there's many more of those types of reef species, and they are much larger, like you're saying.
Huge fish.
Just massive, yeah.
Right. So, you can monitor those through Fishery Independent Surveys, those research cruises that NOAA does every 3 years.
Yeah.
They record those the species composition and changes in the species composition in those closed areas. Unfortunately, since fisheries are banned in those areas, then we won't know what the what the changes in the dynamics are.
Well, I think that one of the main things that everybody may be listening that doesn't know about the distance between here and the monument, that maybe it was suggested one time before, and I think we've had this discussion. Maybe it's good that Thomas is here because we haven't had it with him. That there's it's not really evidence that that's a nursery. We're not sure that we're getting babies. Because the babies have to make a pretty long trip, right, to get to the main Hawaiian Islands. So that must be its own system. And if there's nobody fishing there anymore, is this a good thing because it can build up, or is it a bad thing because it might be, some species might be eliminated just by carnivores or by hungrier species? Or all of the above?
At this point, it's hard for me to say right off the bat because there are still studies ongoing, and we do need more information about the nature of the habitat and whether it is this nursery kind of... place for these species, and whether we're getting this sort of protected area situation where we're getting spillover, or if there are any positive benefits. That's still to be seen in a lot of ways. There's been a lot of general marine protected area studies, but just more specifics on the northwestern Hawaiian Islands would be good going forward.
Earlier on the show today, I talked about the shark kill at Kehi Lagoon, that we weren't quite sure whether the sharks, all these little baby hammerheads, died or they're in a net. Now it's pretty much certain that they were in a net. And they got discarded. But isn't that, in some cases, Malloy, some of the things you talk about, when we get in the middle of something and do something as drastic as that? I mean, like 75 babies died there. I don't know how many of them would have become large hammerheads anyway, right? We don't know that. But isn't that an indication that something interrupted what was supposed to be going on there?
Right. So, unfortunately, those kinds of events happen, and we don't know what the survival rates are for those juvenile. And those kinds of studies are very rare, looking at juvenile survival. That's not a focus of most of the studies that are being done here in Hawaii.
Well, if you took a look, we've all seen the video of the turtles on the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all these little baby turtles are going to the ocean. What, 1/10 of 1% live? Mm-hmm. They're all food for somebody else.
Right, so those are natural, fisheries world, a natural mortality rate that you need to account for whenever you do a stock assessment.
Okay, I know that in the next show we're going to talk with our same two guests about the pelagics, but I think that this is a more of an interesting thing in some respects, Thomas, because what you get here in Honolulu to put together, isn't most of the material you get from far away?
No, it's a mix. So because, we are managing both the territories and here in Hawaii. So there's a mix of information both from the state and from the territories. But it's all the same general nature. We're looking at the island fisheries. So we're looking at people fishing near shore, in small boats right offshore, in the reefs, a lot of the time getting reef fish. So it is the same dynamic in terms of the type of fishing that's going on, perhaps. But, just in different areas, we're looking at different species with different sort of... life histories and environments, so they act differently and they live different lengths and they grow different sizes and they have birth at different times. So it's just a ton of different factors to kind of consider here, even just for the different areas among the Pacific where we're studying.
That's what I'm thinking about. The areas, it might not be, there is no one report that can do. You have to have multiple levels of reports because of all of the different elements that make
Absolutely.
Up the,
yeah. Yep.
You know, and one of the things that we're going to be doing down the road in a couple of weeks is we're going to be talking about the relationships, Malloy, between, say, DLNR in the main Hawaiian Islands and the feds. And where's that band of water in which the job of enforcement or rules gets passed from one to the other? And more importantly, nobody tells the fish which area they're in, right?
Right.
So
right.
We've always got that. So, but doesn't the same thing apply? So some of these reports actually go into that relationship too, particularly when you know one place, I'm not talking about the place that just got wasted by lava, but where one place is way more productive for certain species than others.
Right. So not all areas are created equal. Yeah, that's what we say. Yeah. And because each area has its own characteristics in terms of ecology as well as oceanography. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking for, or what we look at in this report, is the whole the whole system, and not just certain places. And what's interesting about this report is that we overlay the fishery performance, which we use to gauge the how well we manage the fishery. Mm-hmm. And we also look at the stock as a whole, and not just stock within 0 to 3, which is the state jurisdiction, and 3 to 200, exactly, which is the federal jurisdiction. So the fish is going to be wherever it is.
Where
the food is, where it's naturally distributed. Mm-hmm. But we're monitoring the stock as a whole, regardless on whether it's within state waters or in federal waters.
I think that's key, and I think that's happened certainly within my lifetime when it was them and us. I think that there used to be a lot of territorial squabbles and disagreements on who's in charge, who's on first, But to me, the interesting thing is, and I guess this is the way that it is in an ideal world, once all of this information that you compile is put out there, that the only thing that's going to make it worth as a tool to make rules is if somebody's going to be responsible to enforcing the rules once they're made.
No, it's true. Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, someone's got to read it, right? Like, after you compile it, it's got to be readable for
Wouldn't
someone.
Wouldn't it be a bummer if you said, I've been working my you-know-what off for 6 months, and who's read this darn thing? Just me.
I mean, yeah, sometimes I think that. I mean, it's, it's either just an extensive document, right? Yeah, but at the same time, so we make it available for those kinds of decisions to be made. Yeah. So, it's just out there for that purpose.
I'm sure that every now and again somebody says, hey, look, Thomas, just give me the bullet points, okay? Give me what this thing says.
Oh, constantly, right.
And then I'll go look at this thing later. But what are the highlights here?
I mean, so the highlights are, you're going to have to go in for the nitty-gritty details, because we break it down by different gear types and different species being caught, and kind of how it's how that catches related to last year and the past 10 years and the past 20 years. So the nature of the fishery in 2017 versus what we've seen last year and in previous years.
I'm incredibly impressed about that. Malloy knows that we have on a regular basis, last week and the week before, some of the guys from Wicked Tuna have been on and talking about when the season stopped for bluefin and all of that stuff. But more importantly, the gear, because they go out now and they have their marks, they have their numbers. They anchor their thing, they throw the palu in the water, they watch the depth recorder, they watch the fish finder, they know when there's a, what they call it, we're marking the fish, then burn, they catch the fish. Those things don't exist in some of the islands that are filtering new reports. There's a whole different fisherman out there.
Well, yeah, and it's gotten a lot better in recent years. Yeah. I mean, there is the aspect of having different gear types and different perceptions when it comes to those gear types. Like, I don't have to make this distinction when I'm collecting data about longline or whatever is. So there's that kind of break in that information transfer. But at the same time, like I said, we've gotten a lot better in the communication of expectations to the territories and kind of what data we need and how it needs to be organized. Yeah. It's gotten a lot better, especially since I've come on board.
Well, I guess that some of the valuable information is, even if it's collected by people in a remote place, they don't know how to compile it. They know how to go out and do the assessments but then the information comes to you. It must be sometimes gratifying to know that what the report you prepared went back to where it was to show the people there, this is where you are, and this is what your fishery can sustain, and here's what it can't.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's nice to be part of something so immediately relevant, right? Yeah. Like, so I'm turning around the report, and these people are seeing the graphs and the text, you know, related to their fisheries right there just several months after.
Yeah, and that, Malloy, that points out, and when we first started talking a few years ago about this, that's changed a lot. Because sometimes a report that you're seeing in 2018 was done in 2015.
Right. You
Now it's closer. You know,
it's closer now. Just a 1 year lag. So our published report this year would include data from last year.
Yeah. In an ideal world, and this is coming, with the much rapider, you know, quicker way, if you set up a template for a report, it's going to be pretty easy. I can see if this was TV, you can see Thomas is shaking his head up and down in the affirmative, and that's why I tried to say before. I know that some of the stuff that you deal with anecdotally comes from places like, say, CNMI, where they don't maybe have computers to do input. They give you a legal sheet. Here's what we saw. That must be the challenge of what you do to pull all that stuff together.
Thankfully, it's not that to that extent. Yeah, yeah. They've got computers. They're able to compile the data themselves and send it over to a central hub where it gets further organized and things like that. So, it's like what you said. The information is progressing in that way, and there is going to be, hopefully there's this hope for real-time monitoring in the future where, the data can be collected and
almost instantly.
There's no reason that, per se, that it can't happen in today's age of the internet, right?
Yeah, so. But what I'm worried about, and I don't know, Malloy, if this has ever come up. I know that we've had I've been at a number of meetings. In some of the community-based management areas, it's hard to get information from people. They don't want to give you stuff because they're trying to protect their kuleana or their own, their own self. But isn't this sometimes, if you go to wpcouncil.org and look at some of these reports, who authored them, you see some names in them, isn't that sort of going back to the area and saying, look, here's the information you got us, here's the report that we came up, and here's how people far away from you are going to understand what you're trying to catch and allow you to keep doing it or tell you when it's best to stop a little bit.
Right, so there's that feedback mechanism that you need to consider whenever you generate this report, and you have to make sure that people who provide you with data receive the final product that you use their data for. It can be in the form of a report. It can also be in the form of a summarized flyer or a brochure that summarizes all the information. But the bottom line is, we're not doing this for the sake of doing it. There's a need to monitor the fisheries.
I would be bummed if that's all it was.
Exactly.
But let me tell you, and I'll ask you this too, Thomas. If you go to wpcouncil.org, there are different layers of things available. I mean, a teacher that's show and tell might be able to get a poster. The poster might have been developed from a compilation of statistics that you did along with some artwork to show how many fish, what are the species in this island, in this place.
Right.
But so it's kind of neat, isn't it? Because sometimes you're looking at a very technical document that you're giving to me, or sometimes you're looking at a poster that a kid can color.
Well, something I think that's unique about the council is the emphasis they put on outreach and education. Yeah. And I think that's a huge part of it because, the people that this is affecting, the fisheries directly impact, they need to know that we're just not coming in saying, no, don't do this, no, don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's about a relationship in which the fisheries manage, so it extends to them, for them, into the future. And it's just not about putting limits and taking away, right? So it needs to be more about understanding
I'm glad you said that, Malloy, because it wasn't just a few weeks ago we were talking about, I was talking with Uncle Roy and Ed Watamura about, hey, the bottom fishermen for the deep seven, they told the truth about what was happening, and it ended up increasing their catch limit, and it also ended up taking a look at some of the no fly zones and saying maybe we should fish here again. The fish looks like it's healthy.
Right. So giving the, and that's a proof of giving accurate information benefits the fishery because you reduce the uncertainties in management because. You know that the data that comes in is legit and not made up, or it's being put in such a timely manner that the fishery managers can react to it. So it would benefit the fishery. It really depends on the situation.
I also think that sometimes, Thomas, before we end up wrapping up for today's session, that many, many, many times when somebody is new to an area, they can get a certain amount of anecdotal information from the guy that's sitting on the pier where they go. But they can also go to wpcouncil.org and sort of look at a bigger picture. So is some of the writing that you do or some of the reporting you do meant to say, okay, if you don't know anything about my life or what I do, here's the crib notes. here's what you need to know to decide if you're going to fish here or not.
Absolutely. And I think especially for the territories that, yeah. you know, have our management or are under the council's jurisdiction, they take special care to kind of explain the history and the culture yeah. surrounding their fishing, because it is such a pivotal part of that whole, the fishery that itself there.
Do you get sometimes surprised at how far back some of that information has been collated?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes I get some of the staff, you know, working in the territories, they'll shoot me an email like saying, hey, I found a stack of papers with a Kool-Aid catch back to the 60s or the 50s.
Yeah,
and it's like,
so cool.
just
yeah.
check this out, yeah. see if it's yeah. of any use to you kind of thing. And yeah. it's, stuff like that. So it's interesting to see just obviously the change that's happened from, and you know, in the past couple of years, but just where it's going to go from here.
Well, you know, Malloy, we've had this wonderful warm feeling every now and again when we have a fishers forum and when some of these old timers show up that maybe came to be adversarial. Maybe they came to be argumentative and to shake their fist and all of this, and then say, hey, wait a minute, these people are pretty cool, you know. I mean, here's the picture book, here's what's going on. So I guess maybe once again, doesn't this sort of indicate that it is bottoms up? When you go to a meeting like the ones that they just had on Maui, how valuable is that to have all those new people show up at the Fishers Forum?
It is really important to have community engagement, and the council process is really a bottom-up approach where we listen to the community.
Yeah.
We don't tell the communities that this is how it's going to lay out or this is going to play out. We listen to the community, listen to their concern, and take those concerns into consideration when we make our management decisions and provide the science and the data to support the management decision. So it's all we take everything into consideration and not just there's a loud voice from a group here and there that wants this, but you evaluate everything across the board, if it's going to impact the community or not, and whether there's enough science to support the management decision. That's how we operate.
And that being said, before we wind up today, Thomas, the fruit of the labor was that you completed the stuff. And it is being used now. I mean, basically, and that was for the year 2017?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
That is a pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah, so about 6 months.
Yeah, that's pretty terrific. What are we going to talk about next time?
Next time is, we talked about the island fisheries report. Now we're going to transition over to the pelagic fisheries.
Okay, and that's going to come up next week. In the meantime, our guests today have been Marlo Sabater and Thomas Remington from the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And just another reminder for you to go get hooked up with all the information you need at WPCouncil.org. That's WPCouncil.org. And if you want to hear something on the show, you can drop them an email or you can drop me an email. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Also, thanks to Uncle Mike talking about that Kiki fishing tournament. And another congratulations to all of you that did well in the Spinner's Eye shootout and also in the Haleiwa Hanapā. More Go Fish coming up next time. See you next time. Have a great weekend and a happy and safe, healthy 4th of July.